You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. Sexy in Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. Well, 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 welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners, however you've decided to spend the hour with us. We're really, really glad to have you. You may have heard about something called the Obedient Wives Club, which probably makes the hair on the back of your neck bristle, like it has for many journalists who have actually talked about this. It's something that's happened in Malaysia. And it's interesting. So I was curious when I read an article about it. Obedient Wives Club, what does that mean? And with that, we're going to be chatting about that. And I brought the very best person on, because when I read this, I thought, I've got to have Dr. Faisal Sakuran back on the show, because it's been a while. And for those of you who haven't heard him on the show before, last time we talked about hymenoplasty in the Muslim community. And before that, we were also talking about his books. He's among many, many, many hats this man wears. But one of them is he's also the author of Dating the Ethnic Man. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Caroline. Great to be back.
Well, thank you. Well, you, as I was saying to our listeners, you're the first person I thought of when I read that article, which I thought was interesting. And everybody was quite upset in terms of media-wise. Just it was almost like public outcry where feminists are freaking out in Malaysia, in the Muslim community, where it's like the Obedient Wives Club, that's horrible. You know, they're being so mean, they're suppressing women, it's awful. And I was really happy to find out you and I had a similar take on that, where maybe it's not so bad after all, actually.
Right. Well, when I first read the article, I felt similar to what most people felt like that. Oh, my God, look at this, this word obedience. Mm-hmm. Women have to be obedient to their husbands. And then I went through the article again in a more open, sort of introspective mm-hmm. way. And I looked at what was going on and I realized that I think this particular woman in Malaysia is misunderstood.
Agreed. So yeah. Who do you think this woman is? And just a generalization. Yeah. More or less, in terms of culture and et cetera.
Yeah. Well, it's obvious that she's Muslim mm-hmm. From a very strict culture mm-hmm. That probably has or prides itself on gender roles. So men have to take on a certain role and women have to abide by certain roles. So she grows up in this type of perspective where typically, culturally, women should be followers and not leaders in the marriage, whereas men should be more of a predominant leadership role. But she goes on, and the article talks a lot about Islam, mm-hmm. and I did a little bit research on this woman and the group that she formed. It's called Global Ikhwan, and a lot of people are putting her down.
There's
a lot of controversy going on, but I think that they don't understand what she's trying to do here.
Agreed. And I know when I read it, I had the same reaction at first. I was like, whoa, what's going on? And then thought about last time I had you on, where just even here in the Lower Mainland, that women in the Muslim community, some of them are getting hymenoplasty. And so, mm-hmm. and for your counseling, because you specialize in multicultural counseling, you've been mm-hmm. doing it for over 30 years.
Oh, no, I'm not that old.
Okay, you've been doing, my apologies.
It's been about 14 years.
But you're the only one in Canada, if I remember correctly, or originally.
That's what they tell me, yes.
Which I love that. And just the fact that you're counseling people in regards to offering other alternatives in regards to having such an intense the operation, hymenoplasty. Mm-hmm. And if that's happening here, where we're supposed to be very westernized in this community, mm-hmm. as you said, it's a very strict sect that's going on
yes.
in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
What is going on there? And maybe there is a place for this mm-hmm. where it's important in terms of embracing sexuality.
Sure. One of the things I noticed in this article is that she says to have a blissful marriage, women should obey their husbands and ensure that he is sexually satisfied. Now, a lot of people look at these as two different constructs, that they look at that she's saying that women should obey the husband in terms of, you know, prehistoric times where the caveman mentality where the husband forces the woman to do whatever he would like. But I think what she's doing, and there may be something lost in the translation, I think what she's trying to say here is that wives, to have a happier marriage, should satisfy the sexual needs of the husband. Now, in the same note, I mean, you could look at husbands then obeying their wives and trying to satisfy the sexual needs of the wife. So I think there's another side to this article and to this group
that has to be explored.
We have, I mean, if you look at the word obey, when I read this a second time, something hit me. I said, you know, we're looking at this as the Malaysian or more or less the Eastern culture, looking at women as obeying their husbands. But we here in the West, we still, when we have our marriage vows, we say that we should love, honor,
and
obey.
When you said that to me in the green room before we got on air, I was like, wow, that's true. And I never really thought about it.
Sure. And so the thing is, I mean, the way I look at obeying here is not in some medieval type of construct, but more so is trying, being proactive in trying to satisfy our partner's needs. And that's what a marriage is, isn't it? Trying to satisfy their sexual needs, their financial needs, their psychological needs, their emotional needs. And once you do that, you have a blissful marriage.
Which I think is really important, because if you look at Dr. Harville Hendrick's work, it's about the, there's just in regards to, I can't remember what it's called, the imago, actually, where it is basically, where you are basically healing yourself by being able to focus on that other person. And I know a lot of, I know you and I have talked about him before and some of his work, and most people, when I know he's written, for those listeners out there who may not be familiar with it, he's written the book Receiving Love, and I believe the other one's called How to Get the Love You Want, or How to Get the Love You Need, and I always mix the two up. But it's just really important, because if you can focus on the other person, you can actually heal yourself in a lot of ways.
I mean, because when you look at it, when we get married to another person, it's like two personalities coming together, blending together. You still have your individual self, but the thing is, you're blending now. You're fusing with the other person. And so therefore, by taking care of, by nurturing the other person, we are nurturing ourselves at the same time.
That's so true. That's true. The other thing I was wondering about was, I know we've talked about as a collective and individual, because you talk about that a lot in your book,
yes.
Dating the Ethnic Man. And with that, in regards to, and I'm going to go full circle back to about Malaysia and the Obedient Wives Club, how does that, I've never been to Malaysia myself in terms of culturally, what is your take in regards to that?
Malaysian culture, I believe it's about 60 or 70% a Muslim population. And culturally, it is a collectivistic culture.
Okay.
It is a culture where people tend to put their family's needs, their cultural needs, their religious needs before their own individual needs. And so when you look at the marriage then in Malaysia, we have husband and wife together sacrificing their personal needs sometimes for the sake of the relationship. For the sake of the marriage, and for the most part, it works very well because both partners do this. We in the West, we have a little bit different type of arrangement where we live in an individualistic society, where we tend to put our needs before our partners and before our family and before our friends, and we all do that in the West, and so that's why that works. Everyone mm-hmm. has an understanding. But when you take a look at, if I just say this since we're talking about both cultures, mm-hmm. when I think one of the issues that arises in a cross-cultural relationship.
I was just going to ask, yeah. You read my mind.
when you have one partner who's from the East, follows a collectivistic society model, and then the other partner is from the West, follows an individualistic model, getting together, they have sometimes challenges because they don't understand the other person's needs. The collectivistic person calls her partner, individualistic partner, calls him or her selfish because he's thinking, putting himself before her. Whereas the individualist partner looks at the collectivistic partner and says that, you deserve this. Why aren't you taking this? Why are you leaving, the last piece of chicken for me? You're hungry, satisfy your need. So we have this, that's a little bit of a simplistic example, but you can take it as deep as you want when these two constructs meet.
And they do, especially in Vancouver.
Oh, yeah. Vancouver, we're the hub of multiculturalism, which is wonderful. I mean, mm-hmm. most of the people who get into multicultural, cross-cultural relationships, they have this instinctual curiosity about other cultures. And the relationships that work very well are the ones that complement the other person. The other culture. Instead of looking at the differences, and there are many, they look at the other person as complementing their own personality. Mm-hmm. And so it's in that sense, being open to learning about the other culture works very well.
I think that's really important. Yeah. And we're going to take a really, really, really quick short break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back.
Bond. James Bond.
Got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
You talking to me?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Just a sweet transvestite. From transsexual Transylvania.
Where else can you see Hollywood blockbusters, midnight cult classics, indie films, live music, burlesque, stand-up comedy, poetry slams, and live sporting events all at your local theater? The Rio Theater, voted number one in East Vancouver, your neighborhood indie theater that promotes all things cool.
Don't miss The Hangover Part 2, running from June 1st until June 9th, and then Super 8, running from June 10th until June 23rd. For more information, visit www.riotheater.ca.
Sexy in Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. And we are back. If you're just joining us now, you are, as you heard the thing say, listening to Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. I am talking to Dr. Faisal Sakuran, and we've been talking about the Obedient Wives Club in Malaysia, among other things. So in regards to that, I want to go back to a point that we were talking about in the first chunk of the show, which is the word obey. And I was curious about that because especially in Vancouver, we do have a subculture in terms of a BDSM, etc. And I always thought in terms of obedient, I guess sometimes they equate it to the word submissive. And I've always felt that as long as you've got code words and people are in agreement in terms of who's going to be submissive, who's going to be dominant, it's actually the submissive in a lot of ways who's actually controlling the whole situation and actually owns all the cards.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think the key thing to remember is if you have this dominant submissive type of relationship, it works if both parties agree to it. Number mm-hmm. one, it's not no partner is forced into it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's has to be ground rules.
Yes.
And so that's so important because the submissive then can utter a code word to stop certain actions or could say, you know, like harder or softer or what have you. Now, the thing is, when you look at what we've been talking about the Malaysian
mm-hmm.
Lady who started this group, the sense of being submissive. Now, If a person is submissive against his or her will,
it's slavery.
Yeah, it's slavery. And it also means that, in this case, women's needs are not being met.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if a person's needs are not being met or you know, if she's being forced into a relationship that she does not feel comfortable with, she develops a sense of resentment towards her partner. Towards the relationship. And that manifests itself in so many different areas of the relationship. So submissive against, you know, someone's will is not a good thing for the marriage.
No, not at all.
Oh.
And that's one of the things that I find interesting about this, that the Obedient Wives Club was started by a woman, was it not?
Yes, it was started by a woman. And again, I think that she's largely misunderstood. Her mm-hmm. motives are misunderstood. Now, in looking at in doing a little bit of research on her and looking at why she started this group, I think it was to have this sense of understanding between relationships where one partner should cater to the needs of the other partner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not a bad thing if both partners are doing this.
It's very harmonious, actually.
Oh, it is, because you get the sense of validation.
Mm-hmm.
That I mean, if we, the article that we're talking about largely talk about sex. So if we use an example, let's say, for example, a husband wants it doggy style, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife says, okay, let's, because you need it tonight that way, I will respect your wishes and your fantasy, and let's do it that way. Now, the question then is she obeying the husband's wishes?
Or is she consenting?
Or is she consenting? So I think largely people have misunderstood the word obey as she uses it,
mm-hmm.
Because it's been translated, I believe, into English. I think consent is a very good word, mm-hmm. very appropriate. She's consenting to it, and for the sake of her husband's maybe fantasy or wish, and for the relationship. Now, here's the thing. I don't think the story is complete the way it's been told. No one has interviewed her husband or other men, all the other husbands. Perhaps they are also consenting to certain sexual needs of their wives.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is so, I mean, what a great marriage sexually.
Agreed. I think it's really important too, mm-hmm. because I think we all want to try and do that where mm-hmm. we're able to satisfy our partners.
Of course.
And I love the fact that you brought up, and I'm going to bring it up again, the fact that when you many of the ceremonies, unless you're writing your own vows, when you get married to someone, love, honor, and obey.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so I mean,
and that's
the thing
in our Western culture.
Well, here's the thing: it is. It's in the Western culture. I mean, a lot of people, after reading this article, may have thought, "Oh, wow, we're looking at Malaysian Eastern sort of like a prehistoric." Historic, backward culture type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, when you think of it, our marriage vow still today is love, honor, and obey. Now, both the husband and wife say this.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people who are trying to change that now
mm-hmm.
because the word obey has a negative connotation. We even, I mean, in my private practice, parents don't even use obey with their children anymore because of the negative connotation associated with that.
That's interesting. And I find it interesting. I don't know if you know Dr. Allison Jones. She's a family and child counselor and psychologist. What she has, I've had her on the show in regards to parenting as a leadership journey. And she said that's actually been part of the challenge with some of the children, because parents want to be their friends, especially baby boomer parents from that generation.
Yes.
And because of that, the children are not getting the discipline they need.
Yes, of course.
And sometimes when I look, and I don't want to rehash too much about the Stanley Cup riots, but it's there's part of me that wonders where it's just like, if we keep trying to be friends with everybody and not give people guidance where they need to, and so they can help shape themselves and become strong individuals.
I mean, I agree with you. I think, I mean, we could do a whole new, a different show on
yes,
this topic,
we could.
But just briefly, I think you hit the nail right on the head. The way society is moving right now, parents are afraid of setting boundaries and setting rules, thinking that the child will not like them, will not will call them mean. They're afraid of this this sort of rift in the relationship. But studies have shown when you have strong boundaries and rules between parents and children, the relationship is stronger than anything else, because that creates safety. The child knows where he or she stands. So the thing is, by having this sense of being a friend, being an equal with your child, with your 5, 10, 15-year-old child, what happens in the child unconsciously is they feel this sense of entitlement. They feel this sense of power, which is largely an illusion. And so they rebel against their parents, the authority figure, the parents. And then when they're in the public, who's the authority figure? The police. And so that transfers over to the police or to the employer, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why we have the riot.
Wow.
Yeah.
And interestingly, I'd be very curious in regards to the Muslim community in Malaysia, if their baby boomers are doing the same thing or not in regards to trying to be friendly. And part of me thinks, because in regards to religion, and maybe I'm being very ignorant, so you feel free to jump in and correct me, that sometimes there is a lot of value system in terms of that. So whether it be Christian, whether or not Judaism, Muslim, and with that there's very strong cultural value systems, which sometimes, I mean, it's not necessarily, we can argue about that in the West, but it's, I think there's a place for it, and especially with kids. I'd be curious 20 years from now what the kids are going to be like in both cultures if you compare and contrast.
I mean, the thing is, when you look at our society here in the West, we are, I mean, there are people that I've spoken with, the functions that I've been to, where they do not use the word God at all, thinking that it may be inappropriate or not politically correct anymore. And so we here try to steer away from any type of sort of spiritual or religious thing, thinking that everyone has their own spiritual development, which is great. But here in the West, we have more of a that creates more of a rebellion, I think, in a sense, where there are some people who believe in God, go to church, go to mosque, go to the mandir, go to the gurdwara, and then there's other people who don't, and there's that sense of lack of uniformity in the society. Whereas when you look at Malaysia or some of the Eastern societies, from the time a child is born, on the TV, on the radios, at school, in the home, they have this sense of a religious identity, whether you're a Muslim or Christian or Hindu or Sikh or whoever, and this is part of their lifestyle. So they wake up and then they pray, and then they say a little prayer before they eat, or when they go to the bathroom, there's a little prayer, or going to bed, a little prayer. So that's part of that. Now, part of the prayer is then the Holy Scriptures, which have very strong roles about the father of the family or the mother of the family or the child and things like this. Thou shalt honor their mother and father, etc., etc. And so growing up, knowing that your friends are the same religion, your teacher is and your priest is same as you, there's that uniformity that forms and that gives less chances of rebelliousness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the main difference.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm going to go to, my partner is in the green room, which you got to see him again tonight.
Yeah.
And one of the things he mentioned before the show to both of us was the fact that there's...
Great guy, by the way.
He is a very great guy, Dean, if you're listening. I love you very much. one of the things that we did talk about was the fact in the Vancouver School Board and just the system here in the Lower Mainland that they're trying to take out the words him and her in terms of just almost gender neutral. And I'm just really curious if you compare that to more where there's a stronger value system. And I guess it's, I shouldn't really say it's not a value system because it's just valuing gender neutral as opposed to valuing feminine and masculine energy in that specific way.
I'm just wondering, if you're referring to a person and you cannot use him or her, what do you call that person?
One. One would say.
I think sometimes, I consider this a little bit sad, that we've taken certain issues a little bit too far.
Agreed.
Right? We can say he or she at certain point, as it's not so much the actual diction, the word choice, as it is what those words mean.
The intention behind it.
Mm-hmm. So instead of changing superficially certain words, we look at the intention and clarify that for people. And I think that will create more of a harmonious type of feeling in the mainstream population.
That makes a lot of sense. It'd be very interesting, for example, if we actually, and I'm going full circle here, as I always do, decriminalization, thank you, or abolition in regards to prostitution. Because, for example, in Sweden right now, they're really very anti-porn. They've actually got a lot of exiting strategies for the ladies that are in the sex trade. And they've evolved a lot of things, and they have reduced the amount of sex trade there. And I find it interesting that in the places that have actually legalized and or decriminalized, it's actually up because it's become a work thing. And so there's a lot of human trafficking that's coming in.
Right. I mean, human trafficking, I think, hurts people.
Yes.
Right. It hurts the actual, and for the most part, it's females.
Mm-hmm.
It's the females that come in against their will. Again, there's no consent, which is very important.
So it's like slavery.
It is. And it
as
also,
opposed to obedience.
Because it's a slavery, these people are largely not cared for.
No.
And therefore, if they do, let's say, contract a sexually transmitted infection, they are not really cared for in that sense to, number one, prevent this from happening, second of all, seek proper treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, many times people don't even know that they have this, and they're transmitted, maybe transmitting it to other people. And so it creates this sense of a bad taste in everybody's mouth.
Very much so, and that's very aptly put.
Yeah. So the thing is, I mean, prostitution, we largely look at this trade in generally as prostitution. But, I mean, in the West, we have certain levels, I guess, if you call it. We have the escorts, we have the service providers, we have people on the street, we have massage parlor girls, we have all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I mean, I don't think I have the right to put any, you know, my values onto anybody else, and nor will I try to do that. But the thing is, as long as I think everyone's consenting, no one's getting hurt, people are respectful of either everyone else, I think that's the key thing, that no one's being forced to do something against his or her will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think in terms of with Sweden, what I find interesting, where they've gone for an abolition model. What's interesting is the anti-pornography, where porn is Sherry Winston, who's a I think she's a sex therapist, and her background's a nurse as well. Mm-hmm. She's actually really interesting. Pornography should be for entertainment purposes, not for education. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really interesting because we focus in terms of the intention. Yes. So, and if that's what they're learning, so it's not about exploiting, not mm-hmm. objectifying, yes. where it is about the consent. Yes. And when you choose to have sex, yes. where it is for consent, so not as a child, not as yes. an adult. And hopefully, if you are being an obedient wife, it's yes. not through slavery, it right. is because of consent.
Of course. I mean, and watching pornographic films, for example, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that underage minors... I think that should be stopped.
Agreed.
Eradicated. I think that anything that's violent, I think that should be stopped. There are adult movies that are used to create the sense of arousal with partners or individually for entertainment, for also for education. You learn through certain... I mean, there are clients of mine that I've had, let's say females, mm-hmm. who really don't know how to masturbate themselves. They've never masturbated. And so there are adult-oriented, very classy, made adult movies that teaches these women how to masturbate, the various options that they have, and that creates a sense of, and she watches it with her partner, that creates a sense of knowledge, but also intimacy between them, because then they watch and they share and they giggle and they laugh mm-hmm. and whatever it happens. So there's many benefits of that as well.
I think so, as long as it's in regards to, because there's just so much out there, it's hard to gauge. It's like anything on the internet these days,
sure.
where it's like, what is good, what isn't good.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I know there are certain ones, and locally, I know that the Art of Loving is always looking for couples to yes. actually, who are actually together.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that love and the intimacy will actually, even if you're taking it take after take after take,
yes. yes.
that hopefully some of that will actually replicate, and they'll be able to pick that, the camera
sure.
will be able to pick that up.
Oh, sure. And that's what we're talking about in this article, that
mm-hmm.
The Malaysian lady, she says that if women give better quality of sex to their husbands, that would stop them from going and seeing prostitutes.
Hmm.
Now, generally speaking, men are considered, regardless of the culture, to be more aroused sexually. You could look at it biologically because they have more testosterone than women. You can look at it socially because they've been led to believe they're the pursuer, the dominant sex and sexuality.
Kind of like the King of Siam, where he needs to sow his seed everywhere and have 98 children.
There you go. There you go. And that could be an ego thing.
Oh. True. Touché.
But the thing is, when you look at it, some couples have said, but, you know, the same woman every time. And I said, well, listen, if you're committed to your relationship, you can role play. You can wear costumes. You can look at different movies and try to play those characters. You can make that magic over and mm-hmm. over and over and over with the same person if you'd like. So the thing is, looking at what this lady is trying to do is in having better sex with her husband or provide more sex,
mm-hmm.
this is not a bad thing. And keep in mind, sex doesn't just mean intercourse. This is very important, I think. When we think about sex, we think about sexual intercourse, where sex could be something as simple as just stroking each other. Sex could be just looking deep into another person's eyes. That's sex. It's that intent, like we've been talking about. It's that something that creates the butterflies in your stomach. That's sex. So in that sense, looking deeper into this article, if both husband and wife together are able to create this magic with each other, that sexual.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And especially if there are arranged marriages over there.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. Now, again, arranged marriages, we've touched on that in a different show, I remember.
Yes, we did. Let's talk about this here, though.
But here's the thing, with regards to sex, you know, we in the West, we have this thinking that, you know, if you don't really know the other person, and you, how, first of all, how can you get married to the other person? Secondly, how could you have sex with that person without actually forming any type of emotional intimacy with that person? Now, I think, you know, with couples that I counsel, were agreeing, again, they have to be consensual to arrange marriage, but they don't really know each other. What I say to them, because of their cultural background, that they had to get married if they can't date, for example, I say to them, listen, after your I do's, don't have sex that night.
Hmm.
Right? Date each other after marriage. What a concept, huh? Dating after you say your I do's, after you get married. Get to know each other. Develop that bond, that intimacy. Sex will be better.
And listeners who are listening out there, remember that this is just not an Eastern thing or a cultural thing. It's an everyone's thing. You should keep dating your partner after mm-hmm. you get married. It's not just happily ever after you've got that ring on your finger. You've got to work at it. Yeah. And part of that and keeping that magic is dating, trying things together, and not just in the bedroom, but exploring, growing as human beings individually mm-hmm. and together.
Sure.
Giving each other permission.
You know, one of the things I do in my workshops is I say, if you have the intent, if you would like to make love that night, foreplay starts from the time you open your eyes and you see your partner. Right? You kiss her or him. You send little notes back and forth, maybe an email or Twitter or texting. you leave voice messages just saying things like, you know, I'm having a busy day, but guess what? I'm taking a moment to think about you. Something like that. Or I appreciate something about you, whatever it is. And then can you imagine being inundated with all these sensual messages throughout the day? Can you imagine when you're ready to have sex that night? Whoa! It's going to be explosive.
And I think that's exactly it. Foreplay actually starts with the mind.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And with that, if you're not sure how your partner likes to be pleased and teased, and just building up that anticipation by just truly appreciating who they are, I'm still a huge fan of, and you've probably heard me quote this a million one time, Gary Chapman's Five Love Languages, where you've got your quality of time, you've got physical touch, you've got gifts, words of acknowledgement, and I know I'm missing one, acts of service.
Yes.
So whether or not it might be doing the dishes, flushing the toilet.
Putting the seat down, things like that.
Yeah, true. Or making somebody dinner when they've had a long day.
Sure.
Getting up extra early in the morning mm-hmm. and making them breakfast mm-hmm. and maybe making their lunch and putting a little love note in there.
Yeah. And guess what? And hugging your partner without it leading to intercourse.
Yes. Where it's about the intimacy and that connection.
There you go.
Which I did read a survey a long time ago where apparently if you get 10 hugs a day, you're supposed to live up 12 years longer.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, if there have been studies done on babies in orphanages.
That's true.
The ones who have not been held and cuddled, the mortality rate is high, mm-hmm. And they have developed emotional and developmental issues later on in life. So as we grow older, we still have the little child in us. We still need the nurturing, I call it the physical affection,
mm-hmm.
the tactile stimulation. And when you have that, you do feel good about yourself. It validates who we are.
It really does. And it's really, really important. I think they've done studies as well that married couples actually live longer.
Yeah, I think so. Because the thing is, when you hug a person that you are together with, that sends the message that you accept them. You accept them. And you hug back. They accept you. Can you imagine living all your life having this sense of open, honest, non-judgmental acceptance with another person? Wow, you're going to be one ball of emotional orgasm.
It's true, and I think it actually affects every other area of the life where you feel good because you're able to come home to
it.
Of
course, and you're going to look forward to coming home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it's so important. You know, when you want to, when you're, it's almost 5 o'clock, and you're counting the seconds to go where? Not to the bar, not with your buddy somewhere, but home.
Yeah.
To someone who's eagerly waiting for you.
Yes, it's true. I've actually thought about that. Have you ever read that 1950s thing that used to be in, I think, all the home ec books for girls in about the 1940s, 1950s, where you're supposed to greet your man at the door with a drink. You're supposed to make sure the kids are playing. They're
right.
Separate.
Sure.
So he kind of gets his bat cave time.
Sure.
You know what's really scary? I actually told my partner when we got together.
Right.
I actually understand that. I really do. And it's funny because my parents actually did that growing up where we were always, scurried off, fed earlier. So then that way my dad actually got to decompress, have his time. And I never really understood it. And before my mom died, they'd actually been together for 25 years.
Wow.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought that up because you look at both Eastern and Western, but especially Eastern. Mm. One of the complaints that wives have is that, my husband, when he comes home from work, he doesn't, he's not that bubbly to see me. He goes to the children, especially if it's daughters. He goes to the daughters and hugs them and holds them. And what's happened here is that potentially before, when you get married, first get married, and when your husband is coming home, you're there with that little drink or tea or whatever, and you're excited to see him, and you run up to him and hold him and hug him and things like this, and he's looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
After you have kids, sure, you know, you have your laundry to do and the dishes to do, and you're probably tired from work, et cetera, et cetera, and it's hard when you're watching Oprah to put that control down and get up and actually go run to the door, and whereas little daughters would run to the grab dad. But dad, what he's doing, whether it's the daughters or whether it's the wife, he appreciates that sense of validation. It validates him that I am accepted in my home.
Hmm.
So the thing is, I tell the women that I speak with, listen, make that little bit of extra effort. You know, just get up when you see his car drive in. And I say this with for husbands too, you know, wait at the door. And you don't have to go make a martini or anything like this. When he comes in or when she comes in, give him a hug.
Yeah.
Watch how the attention that he gives you. And then go back and both of you watch Oprah together.
And actually, Dr. John Gray has done some studies about that. It actually increases testosterone for men to actually sit and watch television just in silence.
Sure.
Don't know about Oprah, but...
the thing is... It's hard being silent with a female partner in that sense.
You'd
like to communicate with maybe another guy, buddy. Hey, sure, beer in one hand, a remote control in another type of thing, or a Coke in one hand, what have you, whatever works for you. But the secret is, you know, when a husband takes time out of his day and sits down on the couch with his wife and watches, for example, Home and Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I've done this myself with my wife. I would never watch Home and Garden by myself. But I do that with my wife and I ask her a question and she tells me and she strives on that feedback that I give her about what's going on. And she watches hockey with me, you know? So when you do these things, it brings the couple together.
Mm-hmm.
It shows that it creates that empathy for the other person as well.
And that's a perfect example, the watching hockey when you don't really want to. I did that a lot during the playoffs with my partner.
Yeah.
And he'll watch, I'm sorry, sweetheart, I'm telling you, everybody, but he watched some chick flicks with me sometimes. Mm-hmm. Not all the time, but it's nice because, and that's a perfect example of being quote-unquote obedient.
Yeah.
In,
oh, sure.
Where it's not all about sex,
of
necessarily.
Course. And by the way, something about guys in chick flick, they like it, but they'll never admit it. Because here's the thing, guys are like little boys. And if you watch little boys, they like those mushy type of movies too. They might beat up their brother afterwards. But I think we all human beings, we are these little children still inside.
Very much so.
And we like the goodness in people out there and the goodness in ourselves. And whether it's a Harlequin movie or whether it's a something else with your partner, it makes us feel good as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that shows in the relationship.
So how do we keep that moving forward in terms of that goodness, that good feeling? Because we start off with it quite early on where it's just that sense of wonder.
Yeah.
And how do we recapture that as an adult?
Oh, Caroline, why don't you ask me the meaning of life? Why don't you? That's right up there. I think it follows the golden rule.
Okay.
Be good to yourself. Be good to your... the people that you associate with, right? And so it may take a little bit of effort, but the thing is, do good things to yourself, whether it's eating the right foods, exercising, trying to fulfill your needs, and find out what your partner likes, what his or her needs are, and try to do that with his or him or her, because you'll see when you do that with your partner, you'll see how fast you he reciprocates. And when you have this sense of, and now don't take out a tablet or a schedule and count, well, I did two good things today, you've only done one. But the thing is, when you do this unconditionally, the rewards are so much greater than the effort you put in.
That makes real lot of sense.
Yeah.
So what's next for you, mister?
Oh, wow. I've got so many things on the go. I enjoy everything I do. I think that, that's what one of my students asked me about life, this younger man about 19 years old. And I said, whatever you choose, whatever life, the direction of life you choose, you need to be passionate about it.
Hmm.
Whether it's a relationship, whether it's academics, whether it is a career, you need to be passionate about it. If you have, it's the passion that keeps us going forward.
Mm-hmm.
If we find that the passion is dwindling, it's time to get out. Find another career and find the passion there. But the passion is so integral to our development, to our identity, and it keeps us happy. When we're happy, we live longer. When we're happy, our partner likes us more.
That is true, because he wants to be around a negative Nelly.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think this is great. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
We've had lots of gems. We've gone full circle.
Yes.
And I think we do really need to reevaluate the word obedient, what that means to us.
That's
and
right.
Why wouldn't we want to be the best partner possible for our partner?
Yeah.
And especially if that's going to bring it back tenfold. Not doing it because of expectation, but doing it because it feels good.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I mean, you may be setting a trend here from the show. People are going to be starting to say, hey, I obey you. We obey each other. But keep in mind, it's not the actual word. It's the intent behind the word.
Yes.
And so if the intent of obey is consent, is love, it's acceptance, it's validation, I say, hey, let's obey everyone and be obeyed.
I think that's a perfect way to wrap up the show. So listeners out there, you've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. And I've had Dr. Faisal Sakuran, and I'm going to get you to plug your website because you've got a couple of them.
Oh, yes,
and
I do.
About your book as well, because those of you, it's a great read as well. Even if you're not dating an ethnic man, there are some really wonderful tips all the way through it, just in general, and especially in Vancouver. I think all of us, because we are such a multi a multicultural society. I think it's really important read for, I think, in terms of a lot of it can affect in terms of who you're working with, who you're in school with. It's really important, but especially for those relationships that are very dear.
Hey, thank
I'm going to let you plug. You're welcome.
Yeah, my website for the book is datingtheethnicman.com. And my main website is multiculturalromance.com. Yeah.
And are you taking clients if somebody is listening to this and wants
sure.
to book a session with you? Or
yes, of course. I'm always open to helping people. The best way to get me is on my website, themulticulturalromance.com, and there's an email address there. Or you can just call my office directly at 604-639-4443.
And are you going to be teaching at CAP this in September?
I might be. I'm taking the summer off to get reinvigorated and do other things and just take a little bit of a break as well. I think September or October, I might be back in the saddle and teaching another course. It's yet to be determined what, but you can bet it's going to deal with relationships and love and sex and all the good stuff.
And I think it's fantastic. Are you going to be doing some outside of the school system that might be offered where people might be able to? I'll definitely have you on to plug it, of course.
Yeah.
But
I'm constantly holding workshops and things privately. And people, if you're interested, you can go to my website and it's up there. Or you can go to Facebook and just type in Dating the Ethnic Man Strategies for Success, and you can join my Facebook group, and everything is updated on there.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
And put a lot of perspective about the word obedient and obey with the proper intention and positive. Thank you.
Right.
Up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding us through the wee hours with his ambient music and his wonderful voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. We are going to be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Have a great night, everyone. Bye-bye.